Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally, and today we're going to discuss all things bulking. Yes, this is always a fun topic. We're going to discuss modern applications of growing the most amount of muscle you possibly can, and we are going to do so with IFBB Pro Russ Allen and Andrew Berry. Both of these guys are great coaches. They've worked with a huge cross-section of people, plus they both have really great physiques in their own right. So this would be a fun conversation, guys. They're great dudes, which if you don't know them, you're going to find out soon just by listening to them talk here. If you're not following them, you can head down to the description. I've got both of their contact information down there for their Instagrams and stuff. And, you know, two more notes. One being, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And if you hit the notification bell, you can stay up to date with everything we have coming out. Because, guys, we're hitting it hard. We've got several podcasts coming out each week. That's one. And two, we got a new sponsor. GetAzoff.com. These guys are a fantastic nootropic product. I've been using them for a number of years. If you have any questions about them, please let me know. They've got a couple of cool products out on the market now. So we'll be talking more about them through our shows. And if you want to check them out, we've got their website down in the show notes as well. All right, guys, let's get to this thing and talk with Andrew and Russ. One of the things that I really wanted to talk to both of you guys about was ideas around bulking. I mean, both of you guys have put on an incredible amount of mass. You know, we mentioned Nate. He's made some huge progress just in the last several years. You know, when I started getting really into bodybuilding, I was looking up to guys like Jay Cutler, and the mindset was that we had to force incredible amounts of food to grow. And since then, I've kind of seen a shift away from ideas like force feeding. And then one of the other aspects that I really wanted to talk to you guys about this for was Russ. You know, we were on the show before. You had made some incredible progress, that you were a huge dude in bodybuilding, but then you decided to kind of taper back. You brought your waist in. You maintained really the majority of your muscle mass, but you took on more of a streamlined, leaner physique. And we were saying, you know, I really feel like a lot of that was inflammation that you brought down. Mm-hmm. So I guess let's start with you, man. I mean, the question I have is, would you have been able to grow the muscle you had you not done it the way you did, you know, eating a lot of food?
Yeah. I think I would have, given I had the knowledge base I have now, back then, I think I definitely could have. And I wouldn't say it was all knowledge based. I think it was just really, if I would have taken the time to really learn my body a lot more, you know, like you said, back then it was always just about let's eat. Just yeah. eat whatever you can, get the food in, pound the food down. And back then, I think now we've really taken a huge step forward in gut health and inflammation health and all of these things that we start paying attention to that actually make a lot of people better bodybuilders, better coaches. You know, we learn so much more about the gut and how to take care of it, finding foods that work for you, avoiding foods that don't work for you. You know, and back then, a lot of us, we didn't really take into account a lot of those things. It was just like, eat your chicken, eat your turkey, eat your beef, eat your potatoes, eat your meat and potatoes diets, eat, you know, just force the food down. And I don't think a lot of us realized back then how much those foods really affected us. I know I did it. You know, it's just like, oh, well, of course I'm eating 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. Of course I'm going to feel full. Of course I'm going to feel bloated all the time. But I can eat 4,000 or 5,000 calories now and still have a streamlined stomach and not feel as bloated as I used to be, you know, because I can pay attention to the foods I'm eating, you know, foods that are not causing me inflammation, foods that are working with my body, stuff like that. So I think that was just a lot of it, you know, and that's what I did when I decided to go down to Classic. I started putting a lot of focus into my gut health because I had went through some stomach issues. So I was kind of forced to learn a lot more about gut health and pay attention to foods. I went and had a food allergy test done. You know, I started avoiding a lot of the foods and it was, I think it was like 3 or 4 months into cutting down, I watched my waist just start shrinking. You know, my inflammation started coming down. Joint issues started changing. You know, I had less joint inflammation, less joint pain. You know, and then I noticed like my bowel movements were completely different. My regularity was there. And, you know, those are things I just didn't pay a lot of attention to when I first started bodybuilding because it was just all about, you know, eat, get big, get shredded, you know. So it was such a, what would be the word, monetary process, you know. It was very simple. There wasn't all the science that we have now behind it. You know, and I think that was the biggest difference. So,
yeah, that makes sense. How now, Andrew? Did you kind of have a similar upbringing in bodybuilding, or was yours different?
Yeah, in a sense, like for me, like I always did bodybuilding kind of as a side to like doing sports, you know, football, basketball and everything. And obviously you need to fuel yourself. And, you know, I think I found as I got older, I liked the bodybuilding more than the sport itself.
Yeah.
So I started learning about nutrition somewhere around 18, 19 years of age. I started reading books and stuff, which were very rudimentary back then compared to what we have available.
Yeah.
Oh, today. Yeah. You know, like they taught you like what a carbohydrate was, what a protein was and all that kind of stuff. And your basic vitamins and minerals and stuff. But as Russ kind of alluded to, there really wasn't that talk about gut health, intestinal health, motility, all that kind of stuff that we as coaches need to know about today.
Yeah.
So yeah, like early on I was a meat and rice, you know, chicken rice, beef and rice, almost every other meal, you know, six times a day, don't miss a meal. When you need to up your calories, you add a tablespoon of olive oil in or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that kind of thing. For many, many years until, you know, more recently, I'm more in line with Russ. I don't believe that you need to overly bulk up. I think it just makes more work in the pre-contest diet part.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, though, I do think, you know, every guy maybe should do one big bulk at some point and see what they can get out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think your genetics play a big role in that. You know, we probably all have clients where you try to put some kind of a bulk together for them and they just get fatter and flatter. You know, that's kind of what I call it, fatter and flatter. They look like they're getting smaller, though the scale's going up, and you know their insulin sensitivity is suffering. You know that, you know, they're getting lethargic, and then it's starting to affect things like sleep, gut health. So you know, I think with a lot of people, that's just not the way to go. There are a few people, but you know, like you mentioned, Jay Cutler. You know, it obviously worked for Jay Cutler. You know, it obviously worked for Dennis James or, you know, Ronnie or whoever. You know, but we're talking about those guys that are the upper echelon 1% genetic. You know,
sure, yeah.
Average, you know, us average people, you know, more Homo sapien, like, you know, I think more of a control effect, controlling digestion, controlling your insulin sensitivity is a much better way to go.
Yeah. So what would be the first, it's funny because I figured we set up a round table and it's like so much more ideal or entertaining, I'll say, when you have like big controversy, like where one guy feels one way and the other guy, you know, argues. I figured
you're wrong about it all.
Yeah, I figured we weren't going to have that.
Force feed.
Yeah, I figured we weren't going to have that here. You know, I wasn't expecting that. But nonetheless, I think it's important that we can.
Age factor kind of comes into that.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
How definitely. So?
You know what I mean? I think we're all on the other end of the, you know, let's say over the midlife bodybuilding, you know, line or whatever. I think if you were to talk to any of us when we were in our young 20s, we'd all be like meat and potatoes, you know?
Yeah.
Eggs and oatmeal, you know, you just need to eat.
Well, and you remember like back when we started, I mean, all the way back in the 2000s, I mean, my first coach wrote my diet out on a piece of paper right in front of me, you know, and I'm this is the coolest thing in the world. You're so smart. Yeah. How do you know I need all these certain foods and macros? And he's like, just shut up and eat, bro. Just eat.
Yeah.
Take these drugs, eat this food, train hard. Yeah. You know, that's how it was. I think for a lot of people, you know,
did your coach actually put like the weights down? Or because my first coach that I used was a really good guy, but it was just like one chicken breast and one sweet potato was what he would write. Right.
Yeah. So no, like, he would write portions on there, but I was the person who was like, okay, well, how come I need these portions? Like, why do I need 6 ounces of chicken breast? Why do I need 8 ounces of potato? You know, and he would just shut up and do it. You know, and back then, if someone helped you, you know, because that's how it was. People just helped you back then. You would just do it, and of course, it worked. You know, I mean, I have good genetics, so if I eat some food and put some weights, you know, get under some weight and take a little bit of drugs, sure, it's gonna work.
It works.
You know, yeah, absolutely. So.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things we'd look at then to say that this isn't working? You know, obviously, let's gear this towards, say, someone who is listening to this, watching this, and they're thinking to themselves like, oh, you know, I want to be able to put on an incredible amount of mass. I'm going to try to start driving this food up. You know, I think, Andrew, you started mentioning, you know, some of the things that you might see start happening. But what would be some of the early signs that, hey, maybe you need to dial this back? And then if so, how do you go about figuring out what you do need to dial back?
Well, I'll give you an example. Like, let's just say I got a client that's, you know, let's say they're carrying a little extra body fat already, but they want to get bigger. Well, they're not going to be too happy because right off the bat, I'm going to put them on a diet and try to get them leaner.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to get them insulin sensitive, you know,
same thing.
Yeah, you know, I think from there, once you get them to a point where, you know, let's say they're waking up every morning, the blood sugar is somewhere around 82 versus, you know, 96 or 100 where it was, you know, 2 months ago. Hmm. Well, now you're in a position to start actually feeding them and using that nutrient partitioning effect to fuel the growth. And I think from there, it doesn't have to be these massive bulks, you know, where, you know, like some people, like they start with a diet and then they add like 1,000 calories. I think that's the wrong way to go. I think, you know, let's start with small increments and see what it does for the body, especially, you know, working around that peri-workout window and then kind of working outwards from there. You know, Russ, do you agree?
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. I mean, it obviously depends on the individual, their genetics, you know, their body composition. You know, I have some guys that just have such stupid genetics as far as like staying lean. You know, I can throw a ton of food at them and they can eat and eat and eat and grow and grow and grow. It might be slow, but you know, and not put on body fat. But I have some guys, you know, they start putting on, you know, they're in a 250, 500 calorie surplus and they start getting fat. Mm-hmm. You know, so what I would do is, you know, I'll spend a couple weeks, maybe 4 weeks in a surplus, and I'll, you know, pay attention to their body fat, insulin sensitivity. And then, you know, if I'm okay, our body fat's getting a little bit high, we'll pull back a little bit. We'll do a little bit of a mini cut, and then we'll go back into the food, you know. So it's a process with those guys. Instead of just saying, okay, let's just eat 5,000 calories for 6 months and grow, you know, it's let's eat 5,000 calories for this amount of time, and let's back off to this calories for this amount of time. You know, it's a process. You got to really pay attention to those guys to get them to have a good bulk, you know, without just getting too fat. So, you know, then you got to pay attention to digestion, inflammation factors, stuff like that. So it's crazy how much coaching now is so detailed and intricate with people, you know, especially when you learn those things and you really want to get those results with your clients, you know. But I mean, look how many people who are paying attention to these things as far as coaches, look at the clients they're producing, you know, they're getting some good results with people. So,
well, I think that also separates the level of coaching too. You know, like anyone can write down a meal plan, say, here, go do this, and talk to me in 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, like you're talking about, like, you know, identifying, you know, digestive issues and proper supplementation or foods that they need to avoid, that kind of thing is crucially important to getting the most out of your athletes.
Yeah, inflammation markers, all kinds of things, you know, that you can pay, especially with the technology and the science we have now, especially with blood work, lab work, having someone get blood work. I mean, back in the day, people didn't even know what blood work was. What's blood work? What's my testosterone levels? What are those
cancer?
Things, you know? We might know about those things, but back then we weren't talking about those things. We weren't pushing those things on people. We weren't telling our athletes to get blood work. I mean, you know, it just wasn't a thing back then. And, you know, I mean, still you would have those genetically gifted people who would still get results and look phenomenal. But I mean, look at all the athletes we have now in bodybuilding. It's crazy. Yeah. You know,
absolutely.
So if you mentioned Andrew, putting first, you know, if you're going to start increasing food to build that up, you know, around your training to begin with, and then expand out from there, would you also go with higher food on training days? Do you believe in that? And then lower food on, because I've heard it all sorts of ways, you know, and it gets confusing too. I know there's no wrong answer or right answer, but I've heard of some people that, I think even on the opposite end of the spectrum, who was it? Chad Nichols had Ron Partlow eat even more food on his non-training days. Yeah, because in that case, they said because he was bulking so much, he couldn't eat that amount of food and still train because he'd just be too bloated. But I know that in a lot of cases, we put more food around training and then more food on training days.
Yeah. I mean, let me preface this with, you know, every client's different and you learn from working with them over, you know, say 2 months, what the correct protocol will be for them. But generally, I'm going to start adding, I'm going to have higher calorie days on their training days, lower calorie days on their non-training days. And for some people that might vary, you know, some people it might be a difference of 50 to 100 grams of carbs. Some people on their non-training days, we might need to keep it pretty much carb free and just call them insulin sensitivity days where, you know, we're really trying to.
I use that a lot with the people, especially in heavier bulks, you know?
Exactly. But, you know, let's say, you know, I was talking about, you know, initially taking like a client who's a little heavier at first and we needed to lead them up and get them sensitive again. And the approach for me would be to do 2 to 3 week calorie caloric surpluses, and then maybe 7 to 10 days of pulling back, and then sequentially just keep that pattern going over and over again. And the idea is, you know, you get them in a calorie surplus, they're growing, and you pull them back over that 7 to 10 days to create a small deficit in a sense, so that they maintain or even pull back a little bit on the body fat levels. And you might even cycle cardio in, you might cycle cardio out. A lot of different protocols and things, supplements, different compounds you can use that might go along with that too. So,
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to kind of follow up with that. If you guys used any kind of supplements, I mean, things are available to us like, metformin or berberine to help with insulin sensitivity. Would you say you're a believer in that kind of stuff then during a bulk to maintain insulin sensitivity?
Yeah, berberine for sure. The metformin, I don't really venture into that stuff too much. I'm real strict with keeping my clients' blood work up to date, sending them to the doctor, the HR clinic. We got a really good clinic here that works with all my clients locally. So I'm real strict on that as far as getting their blood work done periodically, especially when a guy's on a cycle, eating a ton of food. I have them go in every 3 months to get their blood work done. You know, I'm checking inflammation markers, insulin sensitivity, all that stuff. You know, that's a big deal. So, but I try not to venture too much into the metformin stuff. I mean, I've dabbled with it a little bit myself, but I'm personally not the biggest fan of it.
Right on.
I'd have to agree with him 100%. I slept probably for 6 months to a year, and all I felt was I got flatter. I was cramping. Yeah. And digestive issues.
Just yeah, the up. Digestion issue was the biggest thing for me and other people with it. So
you can get away just, more after, berberine.
Yeah, and digestion is such a big factor. I'm so delicate with digestion with my clients. You know, I'm asking them all the time, you're regular, are you this, what's your poop like, what's it? You know, they get weirded out by, like, I mean, yeah, you guys don't understand what a big deal this is with your digestion. If your digestion's off, everything's off. You know, if your digestion's on, most things are going to be pretty good, you know. So
yeah, that makes sense. I know I worked with a guy who was a really good light heavyweight competitor, and we actually competed against each other. He was, and I'm sure you guys can both relate to this being competitors, he won a show that I was in. He beat me. And then for like the next year, I just had him on my brain. Like, I didn't even know him at the time. I was just like, I got to be better than that guy. And then a couple of years later, we became good friends and I worked with him. He came to me for a prep, and he was bigger than I was, but I was more conditioned than he was. And so we were going to put our heads together and try to use his size with my thoughts, you know, my ideas on conditioning, which he did really well. But when he came to me, he had just finished an off season where he was eating a lot of food, and he had been using metformin all through that off season. I really think it limited him, because at the end of the day, he was jamming all these calories in, and he didn't seem to grow that much, really. Have you guys seen, you know, could you overdo it? Could that become a limiting factor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think you see with metformin in particular, you know, you have gastric dumping, you know, so you might be eating a bunch of food, but if you're going to the bathroom 10, 15 minutes later, that's a problem.
Yeah, are you even utilizing that food? You know, so what's the point? To me, it's a waste of time and money.
Yeah. You know? So you wasted your money on food. You wasted the time when you could be digesting and absorbing something that would be profitable in bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And you're having all this time where you're feeling a little upset stomach. You might be affecting your training. Just generally doesn't make you feel that great, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know? And I was really interested in metformin when it first came out, because I first learned about it because of, you know, the longevity effects and, you know, the potential anti-cancerous effects and that kind of thing. But then when things like berberine became available to me, it just made much better sense. And it's actually, unfortunately, I think metformin might be a little cheaper than berberine. So anyway.
All right. Well, while we're talking about supplements then and talking about bulking, I'll just stay on that line for just a minute. What about things like digestive enzymes, and how important is that? Something you guys would have, and I'll ask both of you guys this, is that something you guys would both use with all of your clients across the board, or is it just specific situations?
I think that's more specific situations. I mean, if someone has a good digestive tract and good digestive health, you don't want to start throwing a bunch of stuff in the mix and screwing that up. You know, I mean, I've actually had that happen with clients. Is, you know, maybe I wasn't paying too much attention to their digestion because it was fine, but you know, hey, let's start getting some digestive enzymes in there. You're eating a lot of food. This will help you digest and process the food. And sometimes it throws their digestion completely out of whack. You know, so if someone comes to me and you know, I'm tracking things for the first couple of weeks and they're having no digestion issues and they're putting down, you know, a ton of food, I'm not going to mess with it. You know, they might get to the point where they do slowly start having some digestive issues because they're putting down so much food. But, you know, that's, I'll just back off the food a little bit and their digestion usually clears up. You know, I try not to throw too many. I'm not a huge supplement guy. You know, I like to stick to the things that I know are beneficial. And if they do have digestive issues, you know, I'll absolutely throw some enzymes in there. But that's definitely a case by case thing. You know, that's definitely individual based. So
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You know, it's not just a blanket statement that like every client's going to be taking this line of supplements. If you're a bodybuilder, you're going to be taking this, or your bikini, you're taking that. It's all specific. And I think, you know, as coaches, we see a lot more things today, such as, you know, like IBS or SIBO or, you know, some of the other digestive issues. And there's a whole host of supplements that you got to understand and know about that might be effective for those clients. So it's not just like you can just throw, okay, you have trouble going to the bathroom, here, take these six things, you know. You know, also along the same line as Russ, I'm not, you know, I like supplements and I think they're effective, but I don't think it's you could be wasting a client's money for one thing. My whole thing is to try to save them as much money as possible so they keep retaining me for one thing. Yeah, I just think also you get to a point where like you might be throwing too many supplements in the mix that could be causing more problems. And then you got to figure out, well, what's causing this? What's causing that? So,
So I guess less variables, the better is how I feel. You know, if you have someone on 30 different supplements and something goes wrong, then what do you got to do? You got to try to troubleshoot 30 different things to try to figure out which one's not working, which one's working. You know, I like to start very simple, you know, basic multivitamin, fish oils, stuff like that. Things that are very simple and basic. And then, you know, I kind of add to that as we're going. So
yeah, it makes sense. So I guess, getting back to food then, I think I'd ask this, because it's a general question. But are there foods that you see, you know, with, okay, I'll put it this way, both of you and myself, you know, we, as a coach, you get a wide cross section of results, seeing how different people respond to different foods, different supplements, different training programs. Have you found in your coaching that there are specific certain foods that tend to work better for digestion than others, things that people could lean into more when they are trying to gain size?
I'll let you start with this one since I did the last one, Andrew.
Yeah. I think a lot of that comes down to like, I'm sure Russ and you guys both have like a intake questionnaire that you find out a lot about, you know, some history. You know, they can tell you right off the bat which foods don't work for them, you know?
Yeah.
But in terms of specific foods, maybe, you know, I find sometimes sweet potatoes don't work well for people as a carbohydrate source.
Yeah.
I find it like rices, you know, cream of rice. Yeah, cream of rice. Any of those rice products seem to work really well. In terms of protein sources, I think it varies big time. You know, like, I'll give you an example. I was someone that was eating probably, you know, six whole eggs and, you know, two cups of egg whites my whole life until maybe about 2 years ago. And then one day I realized a lot of my digestive problems were coming from eating eggs. So I had to pull them out completely, and my digestive problems cleared right up. And then, you know, I gave it about 6 months break, and you know, I think one day the eggs just looked appetizing to me because I cook them for Rachel every day. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to try two eggs with, you know, some chicken breasts because that's what I was eating for breakfast. I'm going to try two eggs today and see how it works. And all of a sudden, you know, everything was great again. And now I'm back up to eating five whole eggs a day, you know. So my point is that, you know, your digestion can change because of the insensitivities and the and allergies and different things. Happen to your digestive system over time, you know. Protein powder is a big one too. You might find that you're using a, you know, a Optimum Nutrition protein and that worked fine for 5 years, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're taking it and you have some digestive issues or diarrhea. You switch over to a different brand and it's working great. So even just the processing, you know, even just the way you cook your eggs sometimes can make a difference in how your body digests them. Same thing with all the other foods. So
And I think that's something to touch on. That I think that's something coaches, you know, coaches, especially, they find a lot of these things out based on their own experience, you know. So like you said, with the eggs, you know, we're eating certain foods, or like with myself, you know, I went through these issues where I started having really bad stomach issues. So I had to really troubleshoot a lot of foods. And then I got that allergy test and I was like, oh wow, I'm allergic to so many different foods. You know, so I started eliminating those foods, and all of a sudden, you know, like I said, my inflammation went down, my stomach got better. Then I started translating a lot of that into my clients. Well, you know, so what I'll do is if I have a client that's having some digestive issues, I'll have them start tracking after every single meal. Okay. So how are you feeling after this meal? How are you feeling after this meal? When is your bowel movements getting screwed up? What time is it happening? You know, you start putting little pieces together and you start figuring out, oh, okay, well, it's the eggs in the morning, you know, or, oh, it's the beef at night, or it's the salmon, or it's the, you know, so I try to keep a big variety of food in my clients' plans, and sometimes people don't like that because it's how we used to be back in the day. You know, let's just eat chicken and rice all day. 7 meals of chicken and rice. It's simple. It's cheap. It's effective.
Right.
You know,
easy to don't have to think. Yeah.
Five years down the road, you can't eat chicken anymore because you've developed an allergy to it, and every time you eat it, your body inflames, and your body doesn't want it. And so that's why I try to keep a big variety in my clients' foods. Is just because you can develop those sensitivities to foods if that's all you're eating all day. You know, you get a client is, oh, it's just so much easier for me to eat ground chicken all day. Well, you know, that's great, but it's going to cause you problems down the road. You know, and I don't want to do that. So, So a big variety, I think, is a big thing to help with that too. So especially with foods.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
I also think, making sure you're combining plenty of micronutrients. Like I try to combine as much veggies and fruits as I can. Hmm. Berries in particular, pineapple.
Yeah, huge on berries. I'm big on berries and pineapple.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, for myself, some in the off season, I'll be eating fruit 4, 5, 6 meals a day, some piece of it with every single meal.
I eat a lot of fruit in my preps too. I mean, my first meal of the day is tons of fruit, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, pineapple. I get a big green salad mix going in there, and I blend it all up as a shake, and I'll do that once or twice a day to try to get all my nutrients in. So
that's all good stuff. I guess I'll close this topic out just asking both of you guys one question that, if you could go back and give yourselves a piece of advice, when you were first getting into this, like I said, we already covered it. We started out just trying to force that food down. What would you tell yourself? And why don't we start with you, Russ?
Oh gosh. what wouldn't Where I to tell start? Myself? I got a whole book of shit that I tell myself. Obviously the first thing was to be, to pay more attention to my stomach, my gut health, when I look back on back then, even though I don't think I had poor digestion, I just don't think it was optimal. You know, when I'm eating, 10 ounces, 12 ounces of protein and 2 cups of rice, and I'm bloated for 3-4 hours and I can't even get my next meal down, back then it was just like, you go to your coach, hey man, I'm super bloated. That doesn't matter. Shut up and eat. This is kind of how it was back then, that mentality. So of course, what did I do? I shut up and eat, just keep it going. But yeah, I think I'd just tell myself to pay more attention to my stomach health, So I think that would be the biggest thing.
I would definitely piggyback off that, because as we all know, when you're feeling like full and bloated all the time, what's suffering when you go to the gym? You're training. How hard is it to put your belt on and do a set of squats when you're waterlogged and your body's inflamed from still digesting the meal that you ate 3 hours ago or trying to eat 3 hours ago? Well, and then you tried to have a shake on the way. Or you have to run to the bathroom mid workout, I would definitely piggyback, definitely more of pay more attention to digestive health, stop the seafood diet stuff. But I don't know if anything we're saying is going to reach a younger audience. You know what I mean? It's like, you just think like you said, Jay Cutler ate, chicken and rice, 12 ounces and 2 cups every meal 8 times a day. Well, that's what I got to do to grow,
Yeah.
I do have, and you probably too, Russ, probably have a lot of younger clients where you could utilize this stuff with now. And you probably see well, my buddy, he's eating this much food and, you have me, portioning out this more, or you're putting more attention to that, I think our athletes are going to see the benefit, and they're going to, not have as many negatives, as they get into our age, their digestive systems are going to be a lot healthier in the long run.
Well, that's something that I use that a lot with those clients when they start getting into that mindset of wondering. And that's what I tell them. I'm like, hey, look, 10 years down the road, you're going to thank me for this because you're not going to have a fucked up digestive system. You're not going to fucking have, a ton of inflammation that's caused a ton of other issues. You're still going to be healthy after this. And trust me, they'll be happy that they took that advice from someone who's been through it,
I feel too, the guys nowadays, they're looking up to a different crowd of bodybuilders. We keep referencing Jay. He was a big, thick dude, and all the guys of that era, having more of the quote unquote gut, it was just part of who you were. Now, see so many comments about well, he looks good, but he's got a gut. I feel like everybody is so sensitive about it. I'm hoping they listen. I'm hoping they look at guys, like Nate. You know, Nate has a really good tapered midsection, and I imagine a lot of that has to do with the way that you guys are eating. I imagine that you could force him to grow probably faster, maybe, I don't know, but then also end up with a lot of distension in the process.
Yeah, I don't know. He grows pretty fast already.
Yeah, he does.
But actually, you know, the other big thing for his waistline is, I think about a year and a half ago, maybe 6 or 8 months out of North Americans last year, we started having him do vacuum exercises. And he started doing them like every single day.
Yeah,
and
that was a huge thing for myself too. Yeah,
that shit works. Yeah, I mean, like if you look at his USA's appearance in 2017, versus his was it or 2018 versus his nationals and North Americans waistline, just crazy difference,
huge, you know? Difference.
And it made his taper look so much better.
Yeah, so agreed.
So yeah,
I remember you talking about that too, Russ. You practice vacuums?
Yeah, absolutely. I try to do it every single day. When I shower, I'll stand in the shower. I'll put my arms up in the shower and I'll stretch my torso out and I'll sit there and do vacuums. You know, I'll do vacuums in the morning. It's a big thing for me, and it's made a huge difference in my waist. I mean, I think that was probably one of the, obviously, the, besides the inflammation, that was one of the biggest factors of getting my waist down.
No kidding. And it makes sense, because I feel like when I'm bloated and distended, the last thing I'm thinking, like, my stomach just hangs out then. The last thing I'm thinking about when I'm bloated is about sucking in, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
I know. I think that's something I paid a lot of attention to when I was bodybuilding. You know, I didn't have a huge distended belly, but I did definitely had some distension. But I would pay attention a lot to, like, the guys that were talking about guts, and I would see these guys with their turtle shell bellies. And, you know, so I was always, like, aware of my stomach. I was always keeping it tight. I never wanted to look like I had one of those bellies. So I think that helped a lot too. You know, when I did transition into classic, was having that stomach control, you know, realizing how much more stomach control I had than a lot of other people. So just being aware of it, you know, makes a big deal. That's another reason why I like to wear a squeam or a waist trainer, is because it just helps you, you know, not because I think that it's really going to make my waist shrink, but because it actually helps me control my waist. It helps me stand taller. It helps my posture. It helps me keep my waist in, you know, so that was a big factor too. So yeah.
That makes sense. Hey, thanks for watching, guys. I have another segment lined up with Russ and Andrew, so stay tuned for that, guys. Our programming is brought to you by Azoth. Get Azoth.com, as well as TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. Guys, thanks for watching. Hey, guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.